My guest David Horovitz is the editor of the Israeli news magazine The Jerusalem Report. He's lived in Israel since emigrating from England in 1983. In his new book, A Little Too Close to God, he writes about what he describes as the thrills and panic of a life in Israel. The panic aspect has been emphasized by the collapse of the peace process, a process which he has supported. He's currently visiting the United States. I asked Horovitz for his interpretation of why the peace fell apart.
I have to say that I'm amazed by the number of people who are willing to speak in certainties and have those certainties sort of overturned a couple of days later. And I think it's foolish to try and draw firm conclusions. But the sense on the Israeli side is that with all the Palestinian claims of exaggerated Israeli response and the allegation that this was some kind of Machiavellian exit strategy by Israel, it really does seem as though it was Yasser Arafat who basically wimped out, who had spent all these years telling his people that they were going to get everything that they were aspiring to, and then when he was presented with an opportunity for a compromise that I think both sides would have been rather unhappy with, but I think both sides could have lived with, he felt unable to do it. I assume he thought that people would kill him, but he was the guy who was always talking about the peace of the braves, as he put it. Yitzhak Rabin was murdered by his own people for doing something that some on the far right of Israeli politics thought was unthinkable. And maybe Yasser Arafat would have been putting his life at stake, but he would have been getting a state in partnership with Israel on almost all of the territory that the Palestinians had sought from a prime minister who was offering to share Jerusalem with him. So I think the Israelis really cannot be faulted for what they were offering. And it does seem to me as though for Yasser Arafat this has been a way out.
Let's look at some of the alternative political scenarios now in Israel. Barak is considering trying to form a coalition government with Ariel Sharon. Sharon is a hardliner against peace. Why does Barak feel like he needs to consider this coalition with Sharon?
Well, first of all, Sharon would bridle at the notion that he's against peace. He would say that he is against making compromises to Yasser Arafat because he never thought that Yasser Arafat's heart was in it. And I imagine that Mr. Sharon, along with many on the Israeli right, are feeling, along with anxiety, a sense of vindication. But for Barak now, he has a real problem. He's going to be voted out of office in a matter of days unless he puts together a new coalition. Remember, he was trundling along fairly happily by Israeli political standards until about 3 months ago, when he accepted President Clinton's invitation and came up to Camp David and offered to share Jerusalem with the Palestinians. Now, when he went to Camp David, his majority coalition fell apart. His partners deserted him. These were, on the whole, the Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox religious parties in Israel. They were unhappy with the concessions that he was getting ready to make. And they left him at the head of a minority coalition, which would have meant that if he had reached this treaty with Yasser Arafat, he would then have gone back to the public and said, you know, I've lost my majority here in Parliament. They've voted me out of office, but I've signed this peace deal, and I hope you'll now re-elect me with a nice, strong majority, and I'll be able to implement this peace treaty. Well, of course, that fell apart. The irony now is that because he tried so hard to make peace, his coalition fell apart, and to survive in power now, he needs to attract new coalition partners. And the most obvious partner is the Likud, the other large, relatively large party in Israeli politics.
Palestinian leaders have said that if Sharon is in a coalition government, the Palestinians would be unable to negotiate with the Israelis because Sharon is such a hated figure. He led the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982, the invasion in which there were massacres in Palestinian refugee camps.
Yeah, Ariel Sharon is definitely not the most beloved Israeli politician in the Arab world. The trouble is that it seems sometimes to me that the Palestinians never told their people that Ariel Sharon wasn't the Israeli prime minister. And I don't think they ever told their people that the man who Israel did elect as prime minister last year was offering to work with them towards statehood. I mean, I think if Ehud Barak had gone up on Temple Mount a month ago and started talking about how dreadful it was that there were these mosques up there, then you might understand why there would be this hysterical reaction. But first of all, it was the leader of the opposition, the party whose policies Israeli voters rejected last year, who went up there. And second of all, he didn't say anything particularly provocative. This visit, even if it upset, angered the Palestinians simply by virtue of Mr. Sharon being Mr. Sharon, need not have sparked all the senseless, stupid killing that we've seen in the last month, and need not have pushed Mr. Barak to the point where he is now trying to keep together a very disillusioned Israeli public, trying to keep his country in some kind of unified mode, and being forced to seek out political support from the people whose overall policies he was opposing.
David Horovitz will be back in the second half of the show. He's the editor of the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report, and author of the new memoir, A Little Too Close to God. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're talking to Israelis and Palestinians today about the breakdown of the peace process and what it would take to resume negotiations. Let's get back to our interview with David Horovitz, editor of the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report, and author of the new memoir, A Little Too Close to God, The Thrills and Panic of a Life in Israel. As someone who favors the peace process, is this very frustrating to you to see political leaders who are not in favor of the peace process poised to assume leadership?
It's very frustrating, but it's not as though I feel that the Israeli electorate has walked away from this process. And in a sense, there's nothing much that Israel can do about this now. I still think that if, these clashes that are continuing on a daily basis involve a great imbalance in the death toll. And I think many people understandably focus on that and draw conclusions from that. But I'm not sure the conclusions they draw are correct, because in every case that I know about, or certainly in almost every case, Israel has responded to attack. And in the one or two cases where it's alleged that individual Israelis have initiated attacks on Palestinians, well, the Israeli authorities have moved to arrest these people. Israel, I am absolutely convinced, has no desire in seeing this violence continue.
You know, the charge that Palestinians and other Arab leaders are leveling at Israel is that it's overreacted in its use of violence, that when people are throwing stones at the military could try a lesser form of retaliation than shooting and shooting to kill. What's your response to that?
Oh, I feel that I'm not qualified, since I'm not out there on the front line, to say that this or that incident, surely they could have resolved it without resort to whatever use of force they did use. I think it's fair, if you look at the first two Fridays of this violence, that Sharon went to the Haram al-Sharif, the Temple Mount, on the Thursday. The following day, Palestinian rioters on the Temple Mount were met with a fairly strong response by Israeli police, and I think there were 7 people killed that day. A week later, in a really desperate effort to ensure that didn't happen again, the Israeli authorities actually abandoned the Temple Mount during Friday prayers. And there were indeed clashes beyond that particular area, but no bloodshed on the Temple Mount itself. And it may be that somewhere between those two types of police deployment, the very strong presence the first Friday and the non-presence the following Friday, maybe if there had been more sensitive policing on that first Friday, some of this bloodshed might have been averted. But I think it's very hard to second-guess people. I would stress that I've heard it being said many, many times in the last few weeks, and I've shared interviews with Palestinian journalists who have said the bullets are only flying one way. That's not the case. The bullets are flying both ways, and there's some very cynical use of young protesters who are incited to go out by the Palestinian media, who are told by the Palestinian media and their leadership that there is no hope, that the Israelis are just relentlessly brutal, who I don't think were ever told that there was an Israeli government that was working towards statehood with them. These people are out there on the street, they're protesting, and from within their ranks are the occasional people firing, and they are what is attracting the gunfire back.
In your book, you write that although it would be comfortable to place all the blame for our woes on the other side, we have often been as pigheaded and racist and proprietary as they are, if not more so. I'm wondering if you can give us an example of what you were talking about there, and also if you think that that kind of Israeli pigheadedness and Israeli racism is responsible in part for the current breakdown of peace.
Well, I have to say that the section you quoted, as in fact the whole book, was in fact you know, written obviously before this particular outbreak of violence. I think in the past Israel has probably missed opportunities to move forward more rapidly. I think when the time finally comes to take a step back from this descent into violence and start trying to understand why it happened, there may be people who feel that the whole process moved too slowly and that there were interruptions that, if they had been avoided, might have meant that people lost less faith and became less disillusioned and perhaps benefited more quickly from the process, and it might have come to fruition more successfully. But I must say, I think that Israel has actually matured in the last few years, matured to the point where when Barak went off to Camp David in the summer, and for the first time, I mean, there were taboos broken in those talks that the Israeli public, I don't think, dreamed would be broken. I mean, it may be that for Yasser Arafat, the notion of merely having some kind of control in East Jerusalem and merely having some kind of control in the Old City and merely having to settle for something less than full sovereignty on the Temple Mount was not good enough. But I have to tell you, for the Israeli consensus, the Israeli public, the notion that a prime minister would be willing to negotiate a relinquishing of sovereignty in East Jerusalem, some kind of relinquishing of sovereignty in the Old City, well, it was unthinkable until 3 months ago. And yet, Barak went off to Camp David and he put proposals on the table that he probably had no guarantee the Israeli public would ever support. But the Israeli public did not immediately erupt in a hysteria of opposition when he came back from Camp David without a peace treaty, it should be said, without having achieved success, despite having proposed those kinds of compromises. The public did not erupt. So I can't fault the Israeli public at this stage. And like I say, I wouldn't fault them if, thoroughly disillusioned by what has happened now, they are not willing to endorse those kinds of compromises, certainly for the foreseeable future, for the near future.
Well, David Horovitz, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
David Horovitz is the editor of the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report, and author of the new memoir about life in Israel, A Little Too Close to God. Coming up, we talk with Hanan Ashrawi, former spokesperson of the Palestinian delegation to the peace talks. This is Fresh Air.